Good afternoon. We're back with the Sean Mo Hoops podcast, the first podcast of 2020 after taking another lengthy break. And I'm here with frequent guest Michael Weisenberg, who was also the last guest back in 2019. So, Mikey, thanks for coming on today. We've been trying to get on for the past few weeks to talk college hoops and have been pretty excited about doing that. But obviously, yesterday and the basketball world was a devastating loss, which still doesn't make much sense. We haven't really talked about Kobe one-on-one, but he's been such a piece for really everybody growing up and from childhood to adulthood, of him being a presence in their lives. What were your thoughts when you found out about it?
Well, yeah, I was just driving to Eugene. I was going to the UCLA Oregon game, and I arrive, check my phone, and get a bunch of text messages. And one of my friends had just texted me like Kobe, and then I saw like a bunch of other ones, and I couldn't really believe it. And yeah, like speaking of like part of our childhood and growing up, like the 96 draft was so huge. Like, I think almost everybody remembers that poster or like the cover of Slam where Kobe had his broken arm behind his back. And like when I really started to follow basketball, Kobe was really kind of coming into his, and was definitely like a huge inspiration as a basketball player, his work ethic, just overall, like, his will to win. And then, what he was doing after the game was very respectable. It seemed like he was a mentor to a lot of the players growing up and had just taken like a fantastic attitude as well. And, the way that it happened, just an absolute tragedy. There was definitely a somber mood over the game with the UCLA team, who I'm guessing was probably had met Kobe, and everybody knows who Kobe was, like who was on either of those teams. And I just saw they were showing the Oregon women's game in the background, and Sabrina Ionescu and everybody, like both teams were getting together to kind of commemorate him, and they had a moment of silence for him. But just an absolute tragedy what happened to Kobe, his daughter, the other people in the helicopter. Just something that really makes you think about life in general outside of basketball. But I would love to know your thoughts as well, Sean.
It was pretty crazy, just because the night before LeBron passed his mark, so Kobe was in the news. And I woke up that morning and was on Twitter, and you saw LeBron talking about what Kobe had meant to him, and you saw Kobe videos. So he's kind of right there and present. And I think like one of the last tweets I saw was, I think it was something to the effect of, man, the kids these days growing up don't even know you're supposed to yell Kobe when you're shooting something in the trash can, which kind of made me laugh, because you don't even think about it, but so many people did that. Especially for me, who kind of grew up more MJ, but that was kind of a funny thing. And being in LA, you looked outside in the morning, especially how beautiful Saturday was, and you saw how man, it was really cloudy. And then all of a sudden at a restaurant, and my wife tells me about the TMZ, and I was like, no way that's true. And I'm thinking, man, that's a pretty awful headline to make up. And then all of a sudden you start seeing little by little people picking up their phones, and just, how information spreads, and especially being in LA where, he's an iconic figure. You have people crying and yelling, and it was definitely something to see. I mean, it was the first time, I had cried in 6 years, due to how sad it was. And, I was trying to think, I don't think I'd ever actually seen him in person. Just being on the East Coast, he'd come around once a year, So in that game would usually be, you know, one of the more expensive games, especially for the Wizards. So I don't think got to see him then, but, you know, I remember on my wall had his Lower Marion, slammed at an article on him at Lower Marion, and had the poster on the wall back in middle school. And then fast forward, you know, what you were talking about, the slam cover, which it's pretty remarkable to look at. I remember playing NBA Live with all those guys where you had Camby and Marbury, Kobe, Sharif, Steve Nash, Walker, Ray Allen, Kerry Kittle. So you had a good mix of high school players that were going to the NBA, some one and dones, two and dones, as well as the seniors. And it was such a talented class. And then, you know, you kind of just fast forward his whole, I mean, 20 years, I think it was 18 All-Star games, the five championships, which really span kind of two different eras. And all that's kind of a blur. You know, for me being in LA, didn't get to go to the game, but was out in LA live for his last game where he had 60 points. And I remember that was quite an experience. The hotel next to LA Live, I mean, LA Live was packed. It was 800 plus to get into Staples Center. And I remember walking out, I'm like, man, this is like a game, like the Lakers just won a game seven with how everybody was celebrating afterwards. And I think, you know, you saw the videos of him and his daughter and just kind of how at peace he was with his current, you know, current status as coaching and, you know, father figure, et cetera. And to kind of see it all come down so quickly was pretty devastating. And something that, you know, won't be forgotten for a while. I think it's also kind of crazy he was only 41 years old because, you know, he's been playing for 20 plus years. You always looked at him as this very adult figure, but it's kind of numbing just to see how young he was and obviously how much more life he had, especially with his family. So it was tough. And, you know, for people our age, you know, I don't think we've really experienced anything like that. I think for my, you know, my mom or grandparents, it was Princess Diana. But it's something you'll never forget and touched everybody, whether they, you know, were or were not a basketball fan.
Absolutely. And I urge people to go back and watch Kobe Bryant games, and definitely just I feel like in the kind of conscious of basketball, when we're talking about analytics, like some people look at Kobe and they say, oh, he wasn't like overly efficient and everything like that. And it was such a different era, but I think the winning absolutely speaks for itself. And, you know, the fact that this guy was part of so many great teams and made teams absolutely better because he had a killer instinct, was an incredible scorer, and then was the guy who could create a play out of nothing at the end of the game. Keeping Kobe's memory alive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look back on it, and given he was coming in when Jordan was relatively on his way out, you had that whole, you know, from young kids to adults that kind of grew up with Jordan, and there was always the thing of who's the next Jordan, from Harold Miner to Grant Hill, and, you know, nobody even came close. And then here you had Kobe, who, you know, from the how he wore his shorts, how he moved, the size, yeah, the fadeaway, a lot of it was similar. And he probably took the brunt of, you know, hey, he's not MJ, instead of just appreciating him for who he was. And, you know, you kind of look back at the three championships he won early on, and then you got kind of go in the, you know, really 2002 through, you know, 06, 07, where he was just a scoring machine and could basically do whatever he wanted. And I think, you know, one thing, I mean, you saw it with Jordan, but you see it with Kobe. You know, he didn't rest on the defensive end. He was 9-time All-NBA defensive first team. Mm-hmm. And I think that in itself is very impressive, especially scoring at that level and then being able to play defense at that level as well. So it was, you know, extremely shocking and saddening. And, you know, it's going to it's going to be over the NBA season for the whole year and an All-Star game. And, you know, sad that he won't, especially when they do the Hall of Fame announcement. But, yeah. You know, it's just a devastating loss. And you could see it, you know, in all the games that have been going on recently of how much he had touched everyone, or how much, even if you didn't like him or didn't like the Lakers, you definitely respected his work ethic and competitiveness. You know, so I think it's a shame and tragedy. And as I said, shocking to see. And unfortunately it did happen. I keep thinking it was, you know, something's going to change and it won't, but unfortunately that's the case. And, you know, it's been nice seeing the tributes that have been made recently.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But kind of switching years, you mentioned you were at a game and there was just the emotional factor, you know, of a college game, let alone kind of the NBA tributes. But over the weekend, you got to see USC and UCLA play Oregon, who has been having a great season. I think only four losses right now, especially for a team that had Peyton Pritchard and kind of lost a lot from last year, but was able to retool. You know, would love to kind of hear your thoughts about being at those games in person and some takeaways from those.
Yeah. So Oregon played the LA schools on Thursday and Sunday. And the USC game was absolutely crazy. It started at 8, so it was a late start. And it was pretty back and forth. Oregon had the lead for most of it. In the second half, they even built up the lead to 11 points. USC comes storming back, and Oregon needs a late layup by Peyton Pritchard to get it to overtime. Then they go to another overtime, and then in the second overtime, they won pretty handily. They ended up winning 79-70. This weekend was the weekend of Chris Duarte. And he had 14 steals in two games, along with 54 points. Was just playing out of his mind on both ends of the floor. Oregon really needed, like, that next guy to Peyton Pritchard, and I had always kind of felt like it was going to be Duarte since the first game of the year. For a while, it looked like it might be Will Richardson. It seems that ever since Will Richardson's been inserted into the starting lineup, he hasn't necessarily been the same, and he had a donut against USC. But, yeah, Duarte has been playing exceptionally well. He had 20 points yesterday against UCLA in the first half and 5 steals, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Like, just a great all-around game.
I mean, how often do you see a JUCO player come in and have that type of impact?
Yeah, he was JUCO player of the year. I'd say there's this guy named Chris Boucher who was pretty great as well. Oregon's done all right with JUCO players of the year. We have another one in Shakur Justin as well, who has kind of struggled at times, but and also had been hurt. But he's kind of coming to his own a little bit as well. But yeah, Chris Duarte doing a great job. Huge reason that we beat USC, and was, like, you know, our best player yesterday against UCLA, even though Peyton Pritchard for this year has been, like, I'm just trying to think, like, of the National Player of the Year race right now. Like, if Peyton's not number one, he's close. He's got to be up there. And I did not expect that going into the year. He played really, really well at the end of last season, but, you know, he had his moments and his ups and downs. But he's had just a fantastic stretch of games this season, and was, again, making, like, some very clutch shots against USC. Had a great game yesterday against UCLA as well. It's just been phenomenal. Like,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah, real quick for Pritchard, I mean, because he had such a good sophomore year. And then I feel last year was just a long, lengthy struggle until he was able to pick it up at the end. I guess he's kind of carried that into his senior year. I mean, he's playing, you know, almost the same minutes, but averaging almost 20 points a game, and has increased his rebounds, his assists, his overall, you know, he's shooting almost 41% from the 3-point line. So I was going to ask you if you had to kind of rank him, you know, as one of the top players, would you? And I guess that answer is yes. I think, you know, maybe one of the next few podcasts, we can start looking at all Americans, but I think he'd definitely
good idea.
Be on there. And, you know, has kind of carried Oregon so far, but obviously they do have help in Duarte and some other players, and they keep getting into these close games, but keep winning them as well.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, Duarte was fantastic this weekend, but that hasn't always been there. And I'll give some other good examples. He got a lot of help from Will Richardson against Arizona, but I felt like Payton was a huge reason they beat Arizona as well, and made some like absolutely crucial shots down the stretch. Richardson made the game winner, but Pritchard was the reason they got to overtime. Just passing really well, playing the passing lanes really well. We're just, as a team, just gaining a lot of turnovers created. The game that Peyton Pritchard really carried Oregon was another game that I went to, and that was against Washington in Seattle. Washington is not coming to – the Washington schools aren't coming to Oregon this year. And I felt like Peyton played really well against Washington State, albeit Oregon lost that game, but I didn't feel like he got a lot of help there. And at the beginning of the Washington game, like, Peyton had a few three-pointers, and then just an absolute scoring drought. In the second half, they were down by as many as 16, and then just slow and steady came back. Peyton made this gigantic three-pointer to get it to overtime, and then in overtime, he made this, like, three from almost half court that ended up being the game winner. And I had a friend who, pointed out to me that, like, if he was like a 3-and-D kind of guy, then, you know, that would be a really great role for him moving forward. But it seems like he thinks that he is, like, you know, something else. And I'm not sure just how well he, like, fits in offensively on the wing at the next level. The strength issue has been pretty apparent as well. It's still an absolute upside to Jaden McDaniels. Just not necessarily – like, Washington, sorry to say, they're a team with some very talented players that are a hard team to watch.
Yep.
And it seems like they don't really play well together. It's unfortunate that Quade Green had the academic suspension, and they don't really have a seasoned point guard. That definitely threw a wrench into just how effective they were as a team. Like, they beat USC by 32, and USC is a good team, and they've been playing really well since then. But Washington has, like, a lot of talent, but they are a tough team to watch.
Well, in terms of – so it seems you're out on McDaniels, but we'll do an abbreviated buy-sell. So, being a hometown Oregon Duck and having seen them a fair amount, are you buying or selling the Ducks as a team that could make it to Atlanta?
I have to buy, but at the same time, I have to. When they're playing this well and they have the talent that they do, and with college basketball as wide open as it is, I'll buy it. At the same time, they definitely have some issues that need to be addressed. And one of them is, it was unfortunate. First off, the NCAA suspending Nafali Dante the first nine games of the year, made it so he did not get to campus until mid-December. Once he did get to campus, his first game was pretty exciting. He had 9 points in a very quick stretch. But he has definitely struggled, and now he has tendonitis. So Oregon was having a very tough time defending the interior before he got there. It didn't necessarily get much better. But at least he was, somebody that you could get the ball to in the post and maybe do a little something there, and had a few moments where he created events on defense. And is a guy that, with a little more, I think is going to be a very productive player. Chandler Lawson has actually become the starting center for Oregon and had a great game against Washington, and was sufficient in the two games this weekend and provided a little more offensive firepower and has the 7'6" wingspan. So he seems to be the best option at center right now. It was great to have CJ Walker back, but they need to rebound and they need to hit shots. And that hasn't always been the case. Peyton Pritchard's only going to get you out of so many binds, but the fact that they're winning all of these close games gives some hope moving forward. And I feel like it's a very open college basketball season. And Gonzaga, who I did previously sell and am now buying, I changed my mind on that one. Oregon gave them a great game. And it just seems like then you have the Washington State game where they don't hit any shots and, they gave up some crucial rebounds down the stretch and you can get a possible loss. But I feel like the thing with Dana Altman teams also is that they seem to build as the season progresses. And I'm guessing Oregon's best basketball will be in front of them.
Well, we can definitely hope so for your sake, and you won't have the Tar Heels mm-hmm. running into them in the Final Four this
I
year
really
around.
I really hope not.
Although I guess they already did get you
Armando
once.
Armando Bacot's best game of the year, Sean.
Yeah, to be fair to him, he has been definitely playing a little bit better coming into the NC State game. I think it was four out of his last five games, he had an offensive rating over 100. That ended today as he went 2 for 10, but did grab 11 boards and had 3 assists today. But they probably won't be matching up again. So with that, I know you had a team.
They'll win the ACC.
You had a team for me, so I'm curious who you're gonna ask about.
I want to know if you are going to buy or sell. Why not? San Diego State. What are you feeling there?
San Diego State, I am
undefeated.
Selling.
Okay.
Definitely have not watched them a whole lot. I know they're a great defensive team. I know we're both familiar with Malachi Flynn from the Pac-12 days because we definitely talked about him as a freshman. Jordan Shackle got to see a few high school games in Southern California.
Montgomery.
And I think for them, the fact that they're undefeated is extremely impressive no matter who they are playing. They have some good neutral wins, Creighton and Iowa, and sure. have been able to 10-0 in the conference. But they could go 18-0 in conference play and actually be undefeated. Trying to look to see if they might have any losses. I mean, you know, I could see them losing maybe at Boise State, but I just don't think, even in the NCAA this year, with how quote unquote down it is and how anybody could win, I don't see them making, you know, making too much of an impact once we get to the tournament. In fact, I would take a team I got to see in person on Saturday in St. Mary's over them any day of the week. St. Mary's with Jordan Ford, who actually did not play that well on Saturday, but who I love watching. And even though he's playing more of a point guard role, you know, a few years ago when they had Jock Lansdale, he was playing more of a combo guard off the ball, and you could see how quick he was. Plus his shot, which even though it's a little funky, is over 40%. But Malik Fitz, who is a very tall and athletic, I know some mock drafts have him in the second round, but St. Mary's was fun to watch. They finished the game, I think, at 1.2 points per possession, but they had 40-some points at half and were just hitting threes, moving the ball, cutting. And it was just kind of beautiful to watch an offense. And they got bogged down, up 19 at the half, 9.5-point spread, which I had. And all of a sudden, Loyola Marymount was chipping away, got it to 7 or 8. I think I was texting you, and luckily they were able to hit their foul shots at the end and get the cover, which would have been not too thrilling, you know, at such a blowout at the half. But I would take St. Mary's over San Diego State in terms of non-Pac-12 West Coast teams right now.
Big time.
What about you? Are you a fan of San Diego State?
Oh, I'm just kind of interested. Like, I truthfully need to watch them more as well. But like the fact they beat Iowa, they like not only beat Creighton and Utah, but like by a significant margin. Like it's pretty impressive. Like obviously, you know, they don't play in the greatest conference or anything like that, but they. Yeah, the fact that they've gotten to this point and just the fashion in which they have is very impressive. And I definitely they don't seem like a team you want to play in March. I'll put it that way.
I could see that quality defensive team, which plays extremely slow, but you know, I guess they are top 25 offensively, but
yeah.
I still think they need a little more firepower, but you know, for them, their team, like a lot of the teams up in the top 25, are not loaded with McDonald's All-Americans, and that news came out fairly recently of who was nominated to the game that's going to be in Houston this year. And I'm curious, you know, your initial reactions, if you thought there were any snubs or any kind of initial reactions from you?
Yeah, well, it seems like the highest rated player that didn't make it is, I think, Jalen Johnson. But I heard there was possible eligibility concerns there, and he isn't still with the team that, you know, he was supposed to go to, which was IMG Academy. Player I felt was definitely a McDonald's All-American candidate who I would have loved to have seen in the game was Keon Johnson. Mm-hmm. He was one of the best players at the USA minicamp, and I just think would have a very fun, like, all-star game kind of fit as well. Definitely hoping he makes the Hoop Summit team, and was just, you know, great on both ends, has a lot of potential as a shooter, and super athlete. So yeah, he would be my top snub, I feel, of the McDonald's All-American game. I had a question for you in that there were spectacularly, I wonder, like, who has had the most McDonald's All-Americans in one game, but North Carolina with an impressive 4 McDonald's All-Americans, with Caleb Love, Walker Kessler, Darren Sharp, and RJ Davis. Which one of those players would you not have taken as a McDonald's All-American?
I would have taken all of them. So there's your there's your answer. I mean, I think the one that was a surprise was RJ Davis. But I think for him, you know, I definitely, obviously a little biased, but I've seen him play through the City of Palms and some of the other games, and they played a, you know, pretty talented schedule, and he has been, you know, scoring, you know, shooting, not shooting the lights out, but scoring the lights out, I guess you could say, in terms of the points that he's putting up. So I actually, you know, even though he's not ranked in the top 24, he's probably one of the lower ranked guys in there. I feel if you're just judging it based on high school season, he deserves to be in there. I mean, if you had to make a case for one of them, you know, I could see Walker Kessler. I know he's had a few injuries, and I've seen a few of his games, don't know the exact stats offhand, but they, you know, their team definitely hasn't played kind of a national schedule or some of the big tournaments. So if I had to say any of them, I'd probably say him instead of RJ, just because RJ has been playing at such a high level against some of the top teams across the country. And then you have, you know, De'Ron Sharp, who's playing with Montverde, the best team in high school this year. And he's playing really well. And then you have Caleb Love, who's been putting up a ton of points as well. So my answer to that is nobody, but I would probably go Walker, even though most people would probably say RJ just based on ranking. I think it, you know, in terms of snubs, I mean, I'd say maybe Adam Miller or Devin Askew, although I'm not, you know, too strong on those guys. But with you bringing up Keon Johnson, who's going to Tennessee, there was an article, I think it was in one of the Alabama papers, and there's a quote from Bruce Pearl about Sharif Cooper, who didn't want to commit at that time to Auburn because he thought that would harm his chances of getting into the McDonald's All-American game. And you always hear players of getting the Duke bump or the UNC bump just because they're committed to one of the, or, you know, Kentucky or one of the schools that they kind of have an edge getting in. But do you think that's a real thing? And do you think that kind of played into Keon Johnson not getting in?
I don't really think, well, I think it absolutely is like a real thing. And like, if you were to commit to North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, like Kansas, I think your chances are better. The guy that I was a little surprised made it, just based on my limited viewing of him at USA minicamp and just in film, is Dawson Garcia, and he's going to Marquette. And so not exactly sure that, like, you know, I think that it's more like for the guys at the end, it's kind of up in the air. And like, you know, like Namari Burnett, who is a good player, but I did like Keon Johnson more when I saw him at USA minicamp, and think that he has a higher upside. But Namari Burnett does go to Prolific Prep, and Keon Johnson goes to like Webb School. And I know that Keon had a few injuries during his high school season as well. But Namari Burnett's going to Texas Tech. So I think, you know, the few spots at the end, it's kind of what you do in AAU. And then, just different visibility. I kind of wonder what the politics that kind of play into it. But, I think one guy who I'm a little, like, surprised didn't make it based off of where he goes to high school. And, yes, he committed to a school that doesn't necessarily, like, get tons of McDonald's All-Americans, but he's gotten a few, is Cam Thomas. And I know he led the EYBL in scoring and has been, like, putting up big numbers for Oak Hill the past couple of years. So just thought he would be a guy that would likely make the game, but didn't end up getting on there either. So, you really you don't know with the last few spots, but I feel like they do a pretty good job of at least getting, you know, most of the guys that NBA teams really want to see. And then us, you know, draft fans and college basketball fans get an early glimpse at some of these guys in the game.
Yeah, I guess for him, LSU couldn't buy his way into the game, but
I guess
I'm
not.
Sure rewarded in other ways. I think, you know, it's a talented roster, and I, you know, haven't been to a practice in a few years. I got to go to several of them in Chicago, and for the most part, they were always pretty good indicators of I'd say college success. I mean, that was where Brandon Ingram just kind of turned it up at the end of his senior year. And, you know, you had players like Cliff Alexander struggle after just dominating the Chicago scene, you know, just mm-hmm. due to his height. But obviously you have players that don't perform well there and go on to much better things. And I remember, I mean, and then you have, you know, Nasir Little, who I think by all accounts tore it up in the McDonald's All-American and got ranked extremely high, probably higher than, you know, what he should have been ranked. And you saw him not live up to that, but I think it's going to be a really talented group. And yeah, you have your Dawson Garcias and, you know, a few other guys, but between all the guards and wings, it's going to be a heck of a showcase, you know, especially for hopefully two teams that are getting up and down, just because, I mean, you have a ton of athleticism and versatility. And I think it'll be pretty interesting for those that are in attendance to see the practices and who can kind of, you know, stand out, especially going into the Nike Hoop Summit, which I know you'll be at again this year.
Favorite week of the year. But, yeah, one guy who I think, like, is made for All-Star games and had some great moments at USA Minicamp as well is Greg Brown. Mm. I think he's going to look really good.
Can we make him the favorite for the dunk contest?
Absolutely. I know Jalen Green can fly, and it'll be interesting to see who enters the dunk contest, but like Greg Brown has to be the favorite for the dunk contest. One dunk I've seen him do, like, that, you know, he just likes to do in his spare time is he does a double arm in the rim dunk that is really impressive. And yeah, he just gets up so high off the floor. Like, he's not necessarily the longest guy, but he has ridiculous bounce and is a very fun player to watch in the open floor.
Yeah, I mean, some of the dunks he threw down in USA, I mean, you remember some of those. He was easily the most electric player there. But I could see Scotty Barnes in there, Josh Christopher with his power dunks. Jalen Green, as you mentioned, and trying to, you know, Jaden Springer, and you probably throw one, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Isaiah Todd gets in there, but we'll definitely be a good group, and I'd say a much improved overall group from last year, which, you know, we're now seeing in college, and a big reason why college hoops is down, and then as will the 2020 NBA draft. But with that, are there any, I know Oregon's going on the road, but what are the next few games you'll be going to?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Oregon playing Colorado and Utah at home. And I went to a couple high school things in the meanwhile, like the Les Schwab Invitational came and went, and a couple players. Well,
give me your top three from that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll give you three Oregon guys who I actually really liked and got to see again on MLK Junior weekend. One of them is Nathan Biddle, and I know he's getting
stretch five.
North Carolina interest. Yeah, stretch five, 6'11", 7'5" wingspan. Like, has ball skills, can pass, can put it on the floor if you close out too hard. Really nice shot. Very skinny, so that seems to be, you know, the biggest weakness. And he had his one game where he didn't play great was against Jefferson, and they have three guys over 6'7", so they kind of, you know, gave him some issues and were bigger guys. But yeah, just I think the best player in the tournament was Nathan Biddle, and he led the tournament in scoring. Was great on the boards, and then, you know, is constant threat to block and alter shots as well. Another player who I really have liked, and he won the consolation bracket, went up against Nathan in the first game, is a player named Ben Gregg. And he plays for Clackamas High School in Oregon. He is a junior as well in the 2021 class. Just stretch forward, 6'8", can put the ball on the floor, good passer as well. Gets a lot of his baskets by craft rather than athleticism, so not necessarily the greatest laterally or vertically, but still sufficient in those areas. And really a competitor. Like, Nathan Biddle got the better of him. So they actually matched up in the first game, and Nathan outscored him 41-19. And then he played against somebody who I felt had gotten the better of Nathan in Caden Perry in the second game. Nathan and Caden Perry had a game in the Moda Center where Caden outscored Nathan, I think, 27-18. And Battleground beat them. Battleground had a tougher time at Les Schwab Invitational without an NBA three-point line, which they had in Moda Center that kind of hindered Crater, who Nathan plays for. But, Ben Gregg went up against Caden Perry, and I felt like Ben Gregg won that matchup, ended up with, I think, like 35 points, like just a really solid game. If it wasn't 35, it might have been he had 35 the next game, but and he still ended up with, like, close to 30 points. And, Oregon State was there for all of his games, and I know Oregon has interest as well. And I think I've heard USC and other Pac-12 schools with interest in Ben Gregg, and he's generally, like, seen as a top 50 guy in the 2021 class. Nathan just got moved up to 10. Nathan's a bona fide five-star guy, and I think the best player in Oregon right now. The best prospect in the tournament goes to Jefferson High School, and his name is Marquise Mookie Cook. And he only played three games due to
– what year is he?
He's a freshman.
All right.
I normally wouldn't talk about freshmen, but Mookie is pretty special. He is about – he's close to 6'7", can defend the post and the perimeter, did a really good job there, averaged 21.3 points through three games, had a tough game in the semifinals against Eastside Catholic. He was 0-7 from three, but he still finished with 16 points. Through two games, I thought he had the best two games of anybody in the tournament, like just in back-to-back games. Had 49 points in his first two games, or 48 points. And he he's definitely a guy with, like, an amazing frame for a freshman. He's 15.5, so he's a little bit old for class. But even so, like, you know, even if he was a sophomore, he has an amazing frame. He can put the ball on the floor. He has potential as a shooter. He's really good in, like, transition in the open court, can make nice kick out passes to shooters. And the rumor is he played some AAU basketball this summer with LeBron James Jr. And rumor is that he might join Bronny next year at Sierra Canyon. And Sierra Canyon is set to come to Oregon for the 2020 Les Schwab Invitational, which is going to be, I'm sure, crazy. And I am hearing.
Yeah, I still have not been able to experience the Sierra Canyon.
Yeah.
Not yet, but gonna try before the season is over for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they're a lot of fun to watch. I know somebody who just went to a game, and yeah, having players like Zaire Williams and BJ Boston, and then seeing a young LeBron James Jr. who, from all the video and games I've watched, looks like a very, very solid prospect. I think Mookie is eventually, if he goes there, he's going to fit in well. If he stays in Oregon, he's going to be a really high-level guy. In the MLK Junior Day game, he had 8 points and eight rebounds and an Oregon offer after the game. His sister ran track for University of Oregon. I know this is high praise, but I feel like if they change the rules and the age limit, there's a chance he may not go to college. Like he's that good. And hope that things keep going in an upward trajectory for him. But very impressive in the three games he played at the Leschwab Invitational. And it was really cool seeing him at Primetime 40 in 2018 as an eighth grader who was like about 6'4" and like did not look out of place at all when he was on the court with all these juniors and seniors. So he is definitely one to watch. That's Mookie Cook out of Jefferson.
All right. Name to keep on the radar and a name to watch as we keep going through these podcasts, but wanted to thank you for coming on. You know, it's been a while, and hopefully, I mean, March Madness is almost here, so definitely need to ramp up the podcast, although it's been a little challenging this year, but we'll be back on it. So thanks for coming on and sharing your thoughts on the Oregon and West Coast games you've been to, and looking forward to getting some more of your thoughts on the rest of the Pac-12 as you see them. So thanks for coming on again.
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. And thanks for all your hard work with this podcast. And definitely looking forward to doing one in the near future. And let's do this All-American pod, man. That sounds really fun. And just a few names I'm thinking of as we speak.
Yeah, we'll have to see who joins Peyton Pritchard on the first team.
For sure.
All right. Thank you very much. And that wraps up another edition of the Sean Mohoops podcast.